This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
We've been speaking about over the last 2 weeks, since the news broke, at least here on the show, is the matter of De Beers and Botswana and the state of, the diamond trade, as well as the arrangements or agreements that De Beers is a private player and the Botswana government would have had, and how this is faring now that Botswana has decided that they would like to, you know, get more value for the resources that are underground in their country. So we called on David van Dijk, who's a lead researcher at Benchmark Foundation, to really help us to work through exactly where this relationship with De Beers and Botswana started, and why now, you know, why Botswana is deciding now that they would like to extract more value, but also just recapping on diamond trade within the country. David, good evening. Thank you for your time.
Good evening, and thank you, Nolutanda.
All right, David, let's go maybe back to the beginning. Botswana and diamonds. This is a very diamond-endowed country. Maybe a broad history of, you know, when the mining starts and when De Beers and Botswana enter into an agreement.
Well, I think that when Botswana became independent in the mid-1960s, Seretse Khama insisted that the Botswana diamonds be mined by De Beers, but on an agreement of 51% ownership in the mining operations for the government through a created company called Depswana. Mm-hmm. And with that 51% ownership and shareholding, Botswana has done quite a lot with regard to education, with regard to health, and so on for the country, you know. And the intention initially was for the indigenous population and the people of Botswana to learn about diamond mining. That's what was said at the time. And this was why there was this 51% agreement around the issue of Botswana. And a lot of young people from Botswana were sent outside of the country to go and study, both in South Africa and even in Britain and all over the place. I remember when living in the Northwest Province, the old Mabatusan Hotel was actually taken over by the Botswana government and turned into student accommodation right next to the University of the Northwest. The government took very seriously the need for skills development in Botswana itself on the basis of the diamonds. However, the problem for Botswana is that it's very dependent on diamond mining and so on. It's a very mining-dependent country. And, you know, minerals and diamonds and so on are not renewable. As you finish mining them, they become less and less and less. And at some point, of course, the resource will run out. And there needs to be more planning for diversification of the Botswana economy beyond mining. And this is a big, big, big problem, because the World Bank and so on have predicted that in this decade, the diamonds will in fact run out. Mm. Now, the latest situation that has developed in Botswana is that the president of that country has now indicated that they don't just want to be involved in the mining side. They want to be involved in the marketing and sales side globally. You know, at some point, Britain was the biggest exporter of rough diamonds in the world, but it didn't have any diamond mines. It was Botswana's diamonds that it was exporting. And this has been a moot point for the people of Botswana and for the government for a very long time. There was a decade in which the Botswana government actually accused De Beers of underreporting the amount of diamonds that it was actually exporting so as to avoid paying taxes in the country. Mm. And a former CEO of Anglo and De Beers, Cynthia Carroll, in fact, at a mining in Durban in Cape Town about 5 or 6 years ago, said that, De Beers could not be held responsible for the Botswana government sleeping and not noticing that they were not declaring the diamonds as they should have. And so there has been this tension between De Beers and the Botswana government for a very long time. So while the initial steps of taking 51% in diamond production in the country was a very progressive step, And it did help Botswana quite a lot. There has always been, some tension between De Beers and the Botswana government over both the mining and the sale of diamonds. Mm-hmm. And you will know that De Beers has a global monopoly on the sale of diamonds. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, David, I'm very keen to actually then find out about, you know, how this relationship has really benefited the people of Botswana. Now, you've spoken about how, you know, there's been education and, you know, there has been some development. But what often happens, and I think if you just look at South Africa and mining towns, is that just because the minerals or the diamonds or whatever is there, it does not mean that the people who should be benefiting from those are minerals are actually benefiting. Is that the case with Botswana? Could they have benefited more? You know, could they have negotiated better terms?
If you do go to Chuaneng and other parts of Botswana, and you look at the development there, you really don't see much that has been plowed back into the communities surrounding the mines. The other thing, of course, is that for those big open cast mines, those mining of diamond pipes, De Beers put up very extensive well fields in very dry areas around the mines and dropped the water table so that they could mine in dry conditions. And that has affected the wells and boreholes of the cattle farming communities around those particular mines as well. And it has also affected the water table being dropped has affected the flow of rivers and streams and so on in a country that generally is very dry. And, of course, the other question that we have to ask ourselves is, will De Beers, like Anglo-American in South Africa did, sell off mines instead of closing and rehabilitating them? Mm. You know, we had in South Africa the Aurora mine scandal and things like that, where people bought a mine that wasn't really viable, that was full of water and things like that. And when they could not operate it, they could no longer pay the workers and they could not pump the water and so on. And so Aurora was a big disaster. The same thing will happen if the mining company starts selling the mines that are no longer profitable, and then people buying those mines and they are unable to close and rehabilitate those mines, because it will be disastrous for the Botswana environment. The other aspect of Botswana, if we look at the statistics for HIV and AIDS, for example, the mining towns have very high levels of HIV and AIDS infection, despite a very extensive program of rolling out the necessary preventative measures and also the necessary drugs and so on, ARVs, to cope with the problem of HIV and AIDS. And we also found that the trade routes from that supply those mines also, all along those routes, you have a very serious problem with HIV and AIDS in Botswana, which, like South Africa, for a very long time had the very highest levels of HIV infection in the world. So you have a situation where the mine provides antiretrovirals for its workers, but not for the surrounding community. The health situation of the worker improves. He thinks he's healed and he goes and he has girlfriends in the community. They don't have access to the same ARVs as what he has, because the mine's health program was not accessible to communities but only to their workers. And so consequently, you find that the levels of infection among members of the community is higher than that among the workers themselves. The CD4 count of the worker improves. He thinks he's better, and then unprotected sex and so on happens, and then you have a problem in the community where people don't have access to ARVs and so on. And also, if you look at Botswana, although it has per capita quite a high standard of living, in actual fact, it is also a country like South Africa that suffers massive inequality. And that is very often the case with mineral-dependent countries, South Africa, Botswana, Namibia, and so on, that you have these distortions in the society with regard to income and inequality. Because a lot of the wealth from the mines is actually realized outside the country. And I think that the Botswana government now wants to see if it can capture some of that wealth inside Botswana itself.
So David, actually keen that you've gone in this direction, because I really want to speak about secondary production where mining is concerned in Botswana, but maybe throughout, you know, the African continent, especially as we do head into a time when green metals, you know, are becoming the latest fad. I can even say there's a scramble for them. What we are struggling to do is to really keep the minerals long enough for us to make something of them and then to be able to get maximum value. So let's talk about the development of secondary production. Maybe we can start with Botswana and then speak about
In Botswana, some 5 or 6 years ago, they forced De Beers to sell some of the rough diamonds inside Botswana for cutting and polishing inside the country. But it was, I think, it was about 1.5% of total diamonds that left the country, which is really, really very insignificant. Mm-hmm. And we spoke to in Antwerp in Belgium. We spoke to a CEO of a big diamond company, and he said, oh, Africans don't have the mathematical dexterity to cut and polish diamonds, which is nonsense, because in Bombay, in India, children are cutting and polishing diamonds. It's really a racist insult. And you know, when we talk about the energy change that is taking place at the moment, the things like lithium and manganese and so on, South Africa has 90% of the world's manganese, and at the moment we are not really using that in the energy transition to make the value add in terms of batteries and so on that can be manufactured from manganese. We are simply just exporting it wholesale, and we need to declare certain minerals strategic minerals so that we actually use them for our own development rather than let them flow out of the country and then we buy the finished products from outside. This also goes for platinum group metals. A lot of those metals are also very important. Things like lithium and so on. Well, lithium is not platinum group, but lithium and so on, which is quite abundant in Zimbabwe, is very important. You know, where we have the manganese, they've got the lithium. We really need to look after these minerals, and Zimbabwe has taken the first steps now to say that it won't just wholesale export the lithium. It wants the lithium to be processed inside the country. But now, we don't know how the world is going to respond to that. We know that as we are sitting, there's possibly an unfolding coup taking place in Bolivia, if we read the signs right for that particular country, because it's got lithium. And this is after a previous coup 2 years ago that happened in the same country around the issue of lithium. So there is really a minerals curse when the big superpowers in the world want access to our minerals, which are absolutely essential for the global economy. And this is the problem with Africa. We've always been at the short end because our minerals actually, and our labor, actually provided the foundation for global economic growth and development. But we've seen very little of that because the value chain is realized outside of South Africa, outside of Africa. You know, it's realized in London, it's realized in New York, it's realized in China and Japan and so on, rather than here. And the only way to get value in that value chain is, in actual fact, to insist that we declare certain minerals strategic minerals. We put high tariffs on their export, making it very expensive for them to be exported, and forcing manufacturers and mining companies to actually process those minerals inside the country.
David, can you hear me? We seem to be losing you a little bit.
Did you lose me a little bit?
Oh, yes.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. What I was saying is that we need to declare certain minerals strategic minerals. We need to make it very expensive for those minerals to be exported, and thereby forcing mining companies and manufacturers to actually add value to those minerals inside the country. And that's not just smelting, and putting things into bars, gold bars or whatever. It is actually, using them for the manufacturing process of, let's say, electric vehicles, batteries and so on, solar panels and that sort of thing, so that we get full value out of the minerals and we actually bring the value chain back into the country and cut that value chain that is actually, realizing more value outside of South Africa and Africa than inside.
We continue the conversation on Botswana mining, De Beers, diamonds, but all in all, how African countries and African governments can start to renegotiate the terms with the private sector with regards to how much value we're really able to derive from resources. Now, joining me on the line is David van Wyk, mining analyst and lead researcher at Benchmarks Foundation. Now, David, I'd like us just to just go back to the Botswana and De Beers issue, because Botswana supplies 70% of De Beers rough diamonds. So this also tells me that, De Beers does need Botswana's natural resources. And perhaps this is exactly what you were saying with manganese, for instance, with lithium, that the resources are here, the value is here. And so the way we negotiate, should really be the fact that the resources do lie with us. But it's not always the case. Let's talk about, is it a matter of African governments not negotiating the best possible terms for their people? Or are there other matters that really lead us to being, minerals rich, but essentially still poor?
Well, yes, the president of Botswana, President Masisi, said, and these are his exact words, these are our diamonds and we want a larger share for us, but through negotiations. If it gets difficult and talks fail, we will have to say, let's go our separate ways, which is strong. I mean, it's seldom that an African leader has expressed himself so strongly about the resources of his country. And I think that is good. I hope that he will get the support from the other SADC leaders in making this demand, and from the AU in making the same demand. Now, at the moment, Botswana, which is partly owned by De Beers and partly by the Botswana government, produces more than 95% of Botswana's rough diamonds, and the government receives about 80% of Botswana's revenues through taxes, loyalties, and dividends. But the problem is that it gets 80% of the rough diamond sales. You see, and that's not where the value is. A rough diamond sells for much, much less than a diamond that is semi-polished or completely polished. If we look at the economy of Belgium, about half of its GDP comes from African diamonds and polishing and selling African diamonds. If we look at Israel, the same story prevails there. If we look at India, India has 500,000 cutters and polishers. South Africa only has 5,000 cutters and polishers, and half of them are unemployed because they can't get access to diamonds to cut and polish. So, Botswana is putting its finger on the problem, and the problem is that our minerals are often taken out in a rough form, and then the minerals are processed, and once they are processed, they are sold for much more. If you look at Switzerland selling platinum, and in 2020, Britain was the biggest exporter of platinum in the world, but it doesn't have a single platinum mine. This is the economics of underdevelopment that is existing in the world today, in which Africa really is the most important continent in terms of the supply of the minerals and resources required for the global economy to grow, but it really gets the worst deal from it.
So, let's just talk about then what happens to Botswana, for instance, David, if, ties are severed here. Is it really a train smash? Could another miner come and say, we're willing to meet you where you'd like to be met? Because I think, that's an important aspect, is that we keep hearing that we need investment, we need foreign investment. And so De Beers does come in and they do invest. And then we're told that if these investments leave our country, our economies will essentially crumble. Will this really, this tough negotiation from President Masisi put the Botswana economy, at risk?
Well, I think that with regards to Botswana, they did really well between 1965 and the present in training people to be engineers, to be geologists, to be, those things that are required to do diamond mining. And a lot of Botswana citizens are quite unhappy because the BS keeps on appointing people from Britain into skilled positions, knowing the training program that was there in the country. When we did our research there, we heard quite a few people complaining that, you know, the Botswana government sent them out to become geologists and engineers and so on, but they couldn't find jobs with De Beers because De Beers keeps on appointing the people from England in those particular mines. And then, of course, the other thing with Botswana is that it started, it put up a cutting and polishing plant in Botswana, but that cutting and polishing plant hardly gets any rough diamonds to process. It doesn't get enough diamonds to process. But why, do you ask yourself, is there not also plans for the use of industrial diamonds in industrial processes and plans for jewelry manufacturing and so on in Botswana itself? Why are these things all situated in Antwerp, in Tel Aviv, in London, and so on, and not in the country where the diamonds themselves are produced? And we know that the people of Southern Africa, if we look at, for example, the soapstone art of Southern Africa, that they are actually very artistic, and therefore there's no reason to suggest that they cannot deal with creating very artistic creations around diamonds and diamond jewelry.
Well, David, I want to thank you so much for your time this evening. I think you've given us some very valuable insights with regards to this matter, and really, I think, painting the picture or confirming some of our suspicions about the fact that we're just not doing enough to get the value that we should be getting out of our minerals and our resources. David van Wyk is a mining analyst and lead researcher at the Benchmarks Foundation.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.